Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Reverend Master Jiu apparently said several times, or different versions of the following, if you're going to sit in front of a wall and practice meditation, you run the risk of being grabbed by the cosmic Buddha. And there's actually a lot in that short statement. People come to meditation practice and to Buddhism for a lot of different reasons. And probably not everyone is looking for full enlightenment of a Buddha. It may be that they just want to feel a little bit better, or become a bit happier, become calmer. In my case, I was a young, very young man, living in or working in a small town in rural Alberta, and quite lonely, and would go to the bar every night and drink beer and go to my room and fall asleep and sometimes pass out and wake up and go to work in the morning. And I came across an article in a Reader's Digest about how to meditate. This would be 1973 or 4. And meditation was kind of exploding all over the place. There were all kinds of different spiritual practices being taught and being taken up by people. Some of them were probably not the best practices, or the people who were teaching them had motives of fame and gain rather than handing on and teaching a tradition. Anyways, in my case, it was this article told about how to meditate using a mantra. And it more dealt with the physiological benefits of doing so. This fellow who was a professor in Harvard, you know, did all these studies and proved that meditation calmed people down, lowered their blood pressure, made them calmer through actual, you know, measurable means. He tested their brain waves and things like that. So I thought, oh, well, okay. I was actually deeply unhappy. I didn't even realize how unhappy I was at the time. And tried it out. And, you know, the instructions were to carry it on several days in a row before you might feel any benefits. And I remember I did this every night when I got back from work. And I remember the third night I got back from work, I had some supper, and then I went to the bar, and I was sitting there, I ordered a beer, and I was sitting there, and everything seemed clearer to me. And I felt different. And I realized I felt calm, and I didn't even want to finish my beer. In fact, I think I might have even left the bar without finishing, which was like unbelievable to me that I would do such a thing. And so that was the beginning of my search. I didn't realize I was on a search at the time. I thought I was looking for a way to feel different. So Dogen and other teachers have talked about what Dogen called the way-seeking mind, arousing the way-seeking mind, or giving you know, arousing that in ourselves. And this is also called bodhicitta in Sanskrit. It means the heart or the mind that seeks the way. It's the heart of a bodhisattva. At the time, I didn't realize I was on a journey to become a bodhisattva or to try to become a bodhisattva. I just wanted to feel better. Lama Yeshe did a talk about that, and he said, if you're just practicing to feel a little bit better, then you're not going to get very much out of it. But that's where I started. And I want to read what Dogen said. This is from a book called Shobo Genzo Zui Monkey, translated by a monk named Shohaku Okumura, who I met once. And anyways, somebody asked him about, you know, the way-seeking mind, and the question was, I'll read the question. Although many years have passed since aspiring to learn the way, I have not yet had any realization. Many of the ancient teachers said that the way does not depend on intelligence or wisdom. Therefore, I don't think we should demean ourselves because of our inferior capacity. Is there something about this that has been handed down in the tradition which I should keep in mind? And Dogen starts off by saying, you're right, it's about not relying on intelligent, talent, quick-wittedness, or wisdom in learning the way. And then he goes on and says, however, it is wrong to mistakenly encourage a person to become blind, deaf, or ignorant. In other words, if we're going to start on the path, we should allow for the possibility that we might find what we're looking for, which is what Reverend Master Jiu was saying. He goes on to say this, I believe this. It depends only on whether one's aspiration is firmly determined or not. A person who arouses true aspiration and studies as hard as his capacity allows will not fail to attain the way. And Reverend Master has put it this way. If you're the type of person who is looking for this sort of thing, you're the type of person who will find it. I'm going to just enter two more people here. Sorry. It's easy when I'm here by myself. Yeah, if you're the type of person who is looking for this sort of thing, you're the type of person who will find it. Dogen goes on to say, we have to be careful to concentrate on and directly carry out the following practice. First of all, just maintain the aspiration to earnestly seek. For example, a person who desires to steal a precious... Oh, I won't go into that, because I didn't think it was an appropriate thing. He basically says, if somebody's single-mindedly focused on something, then all their efforts are going to... towards achieving that thing. And he says, in the same way, if the aspiration to seek the way is earnest enough, when you practice shikantaza, which is serene reflection meditation, or study the koans, or meet your teacher, though the aim is high, you will hit the mark. Though it is deep, you will fish it out. Then he says, next, to arouse such an aspiration, think deeply in your heart of the impermanence of the world. This is something he talks about over and over again in his writings. And he says that seeing impermanence, seeing into impermanence is, he says when you see it completely, it is enlightenment itself. It is not a matter of meditating using some provisional method of contemplation. It is not a matter of fabricating in our heads that which does truly not really exist. Impermanence is truly the reality right in front of our eyes. We need not wait for some teaching from others, proof from some passage of scripture or some principle. Born in the morning, dead in the evening. A person we saw yesterday is no longer here today. These are the facts we see with our eyes and hear with our ears. This is what we see and hear about others. Applying this to our own bodies and thinking of the reality of all things, though we expect to live for 70 or 80 years, we die when we must die. During our lifetime, though we may see the reality of sorrow, pleasure, love of our families, and hatred of our enemies, these are not really worthy matters. We could spend time letting go of them. In reality, it is only today or even this moment that we can thus think of worldly affairs or of the Buddha way. Therefore, in such an unpredictable world, it is extremely foolish to waste time worrying about various ways of earning a living in order to postpone one's death, uncertain as it is, to say nothing of plotting evil against others. Sometimes I think people can find the teachings of Buddhism kind of depressing or make them feel despair. But that's only because, I should put it this way. That is when we are looking at it from our own selfish point of view. The reality, as he said, is that everything is impermanent. Impermanence is right before us at this very moment. And within this impermanence, or how could I put it? This impermanence is what's called emptiness. This impermanence is emptiness. But it's also, and it's also great compassion itself. Lama Yeshe says that it's loving kindness. He says, if you make the aspiration to seek the way without loving kindness, then everything that you get from the meditation or from the practice, you'll immediately lose because you're going at it from the wrong way. You're going at it from a grasping. And I remember, when I first... This is a few years later. Well, flash forward a few years later in my life. I had realized that I wanted to study Buddhism, or at least I was drawn to it. I didn't really want to study it or anything. I was very mixed up by this time. Forget about going to the bar every night. I was in the throes of, a fairly healthy alcohol and drug habit. Yet I was still drawn to meditation and Buddhism. And I remember I used the group in Vancouver, this would be back in the late 70s, there was a group there associated with the Abbey. And from that group actually is what the Lionsgate Buddhist Priory emerged out of that group. So I would go, they would put on these maybe monthly or bi-monthly meditation weekends, and a monk would come up from the abbey and teach, and you'd sit there and you'd meditate quite a lot through the day. And I remember I would really look forward to going to these things, and it wasn't so much hearing what the monk had to say. This is the meditation, because I would come out feeling so much, that same feeling of clarity and calm. And then I would try to use that to make, I don't know how to put this. I was grasping after those feelings. So I was very selfish in, my motivations, I guess you could say. And so those feelings of calmness and clarity would very quickly disperse because I'd go back into my old habits. And I thought somehow that I could do that, like use the meditation to feel calm and then continue on my other, you know, habits of life. And I don't want to make this a whole story about myself, but things evolved. And here I am as a monk. Who would have thought? Anyways, I'm not sure. There is something else I wanted to say about this, and that is I had been grabbed by the cosmic Buddha that very first time I sat down to meditate. I just didn't realize it. Something within me had given rise to seeking true freedom from suffering. I didn't realize it at the time. So I was still floundering around, thinking I could continue to just kind of stomp my way through life and be completely irresponsible and have the benefits of Buddhism. But something in me had been awakened. I will tell this. I may have told this story before. Sorry if I'm repeating myself, because this is important. The last day when I quit drinking, I had gone out at 11 o'clock in the morning with friends, and we were bar hopping all day. And I was drinking all day and, you know, getting drunker and drunker and drunker. And yet I couldn't find that thing that I was always looking for when I drank, which was to get oblivious to the suffering that I felt. That's why I drank. And it was literally as if there was a being sort of sitting on my shoulder here watching me. And not judging, not going, oh, you bad person, but just watching. And I couldn't turn away from that being, from that. It was my own awareness. I couldn't turn away from my own awareness of what I was doing, how silly I was acting, you know, thinking that I was all sophisticated and grown up, and how actually I was acting like a fool. And that night I went home to my house, I think it was about midnight, and I just, what happened was I almost heard a voice saying, if you continue to do this, you're going to die. And my father, who was a horrible, you know, really, really desperate alcoholic, only had about 2 years left to live. He was drinking himself into a grave. And what it really came up was, if you continue to do this, you're going to end up like him and you're going to die. And I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die. And I broke down. And basically, it was like in the Litany of Great Compassion, where you say, all is defilement, earth, earth. That is what I felt. That it was just all defiled. And yet I cried out. To Indra, the creator, we cry. I cried out in my heart. And Great Compassion answered. And I'd like to say it was just a steady climb up the mountain since then, but it wasn't. It was very, very difficult. That was the last time I drank. But it wasn't easy because I had to look at the wreckage of my life and all my karmic, it's like if I look behind me, I'd see this, you know, I cut this swath of destruction. And I had to do something about that. I had to do something about that. And I'm really, really grateful that I was able to discover Buddhism because it really saved my life. You know, that's what awakened something in me. That's what I wanted to say was we shouldn't judge ourselves. If we think we're a really horrible trainee, or we think of ourselves as all the things we haven't done or the things we have done which make it impossible for us to achieve the way, we shouldn't do that because everybody here, I would say, who is here has come here because they're earnestly seeking. And you may not know it or feel it, but the bodhicitta has been awakened in you. And the promise, as Dogen says, if you're the person who looks for these things, you're the person who will find them. And you never know. You might be a moment's way away from becoming a fully enlightened Buddha. I remember Reverend Master Koten said once to me, he said, you should never look down on a person. Or maybe he was quoting Reverend Master Jiu, but he said, don't look down on a person passed out drunk in the gutter. They may be doing really deep bodhisattva practice. Don't judge yourself and don't judge others. I remember when I was a new monk, there was somebody who was coming to our priory, and he was painfully sincere. And it sort of bothered me. And I said to my teacher, you know, it's a bit much. And he said, so you should just ignore that. Just even ignore that thought going through your head. That person is a deeply sincere person. And that's what you need to see. And that was a very helpful piece of advice. I thought I had something else marked out here to read, but I don't know if I want to. And what I'm talking about, you know, in other traditions might be called the awakening of faith. And if you think you don't have any faith, or how do you awaken faith? Well, everybody's here, so you must have some sort of faith. As Reverend Master Jesus said, we all believe that when we go to when the sun goes down at night, it's going to come up in the morning. But there's no proof of that. We only have faith that it's going to come up. There's an old saying, or there's this old kind of joke. A preacher is talking to his Christian flock, and he said, brothers and sisters, you have come here to pray for rain. Well, I ask you, where are your umbrellas? Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.